This is
implicitly
awkward.
Cue the music.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm one of your hosts, Alexia.
I'm your other host, Marcus.
And today we are going to be talking about adulting. So, you know, got the new job. That's just like one phase of the adulting life. Ooh. But, you know, a lot of other things have started to change too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like it's, we've talked about this on and off air, but it's like being in a new season and then like having your priorities shift along with that new season. Mm-hmm. And like, it's kind of crazy to watch it happen. And also seeing it happen to your peers at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of my friends are getting married and it's just like, we are entering a whole new season, as you say. And also, I'm not going to lie, like my body just hurts sometimes. Like I can't do the exercises I used to do in the gym. Like I have to be really aware of how I'm doing the exercise because I like get continuous injuries.
Yo, I'm not as spry as I used to be. I can't believe I'm using the word spry to describe myself.
We're old. Just by you using that word.
God. What? You know, these old bones don't, like, my liver doesn't work the way it used to. You know what I'm saying? I used to be able to drink forever. Can't do that.
No, I can't, like, even just, like, two drinks. Even, let's get real. Even one hard drink. And I can feel that the next day when I wake up. This is like really just bad.
Hydrate or dehydrate. It's like just so much more water than I used to. You know, I used to not drink nearly as much water as I do now.
Oh, I have always been drinking water. That is one tip that I will say. Just drink a lot of water always. You know, you want to keep that skin fresh.
Seriously. Yep. Man, because I'll never go back to having the pimples that I had. Never. Not for anybody.
Yeah. Good skincare routine. I've heard this is definitely something like guys don't necessarily like start doing until later. I've heard a lot of guys are like, oh yeah, I have a new skincare routine because like my girls put me on, or they see like ladies in their family or, you know, a person in their family who does skin stuff. So Marcus, do you have a skincare routine?
Yep. And good. And my girl put me on. So thanks, baby. But yo, Clinique changed everything. I use Clinique now. Clinique is great. And I use a serum as well.
Wow, serum.
But like, you think I was put on to, you know, that? And the people had to tell me to use that. You know, that was new. I feel like I had a few people yell at me for the products that I was using. And then I just asked, all right, what product should I be using instead? And I use this, and this. Avoid this. But then also, everybody's skin is different. So like,
yeah.
So, I mean, I took the feedback, of course, trying out some new things, found something that works for me. So, but yeah, that's about it. And just drinking a lot of water. Mm-hmm. Trying to get some sleep.
Sleep is crucial, super crucial. So that makes me think of like, we spoke about this before, but like just juggling everything, right? Like job, relationship, friendship, you know, finances, family, taking care of yourself too. How are you finding just juggling everything?
Man, and it's difficult, honestly, because if I had some clones, I would put my clones to work and have them handle some of those responsibilities as I handled other responsibilities. But Like trying to schedule time to just like call my parents, like setting a reminder on my phone, like call your mom, you know what I'm saying? Like, and at the same time, thinking hard about like my social settings, like, yo, when's the last time you hung out with some friends? Like, call them people, you know what I'm saying? Go hang out with them. And then at the same time, when's the last time you worked out? Make some time for yourself. Do it, because you know no one else is going to. It's a lot. I mean, managing as best I can, but I really think it takes a lot of just like a lot of discipline. And I think discipline is something that I've had to like grow into. Still growing into it. Far from a master. But like, I don't know, like at least for me and my experience, like just trying to like literally like schedule time for everything and everyone. Because I feel like it's easy to get lost in it. And just like look up and just like, oh wow, I'm in the house still. I haven't seen anybody, haven't seen the light of day, you know what I'm saying? Like under a blanket. That's easy for me. So just like making sure I go and do and talk to people, forcing myself to do so. Yeah. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah. So one thing that I want to bring up is like transitioning, like we're still in a pandemic, but right. You know, people have returned to work and things like that. But I can find myself, you know, just wanting to stay home and maybe not reaching out to friends to go out together, you know, things like that, just because I got so used to just being in the house and like not seeing people. I think there's a part of me that's still kind of, you know, nervous or anxious around just contracting COVID. So I tried to like not go to too many things or like hang out with like a bunch of people, especially one right after each other, because I want to make sure that I feel okay and that I don't give anything to anybody. I think that's like one of my biggest things. So I feel like I have lost a little bit of connection of just like seeing friends on the regular. But regards to juggling, yeah, for me, I really need to make sure that I have times where I'm going to the gym and like being physically active, because if not, I just notice like my mental health will kind of deteriorate. I'll just get very like foggy and feel really tired and like lethargic, and working out really helps me to just get that extra dopamine, get that exercise. But so far, juggling wise, I think things are good. I've always been kind of disciplined, I think. I tend to do things in advance, like even my birthday stuff, I've already started planning like well in advance.
Nice.
So I think you're talking about like that discipline. I think it's really like planning too. Planning, because that's definitely kind of made things less stressful. And I also don't like to think about what I have to do work-wise for the week until, you know, the clock turns 9 a.m. on Monday and I'm getting paid to do it. Because I'm not getting paid to stress out, you know, on Friday night, Saturday, Sunday night. I'm not going to stress out about it.
Yo, like... Work-life balance, yo, needed, necessary. Like, it's so easy to like not have it too, right? Because I don't know about you, but when you're a new hire, in my experience, it feels like it's time to like, all right, I have to show these people I'm a good team player. And so I will take on any task you assign to me. I am a busy bee and I'm an eager beaver. I am ready and willing. That was me years ago. It's not me anymore. But like at one point I used to think to myself, like, no, I gotta impress these people. I gotta show these people I'm ready. And that's cool. when I'm on work time. But that's it. You know what I'm saying? Like when I'm off work time, like it's like I gotta turn off my work phone. They gave me a work phone. That's kind of cool. But it's like, yo, okay, I'm not gonna check it until Monday morning, right? And like my email, leave that email in there. It'll be fine. Mm-hmm. They'll be okay. I don't know. What about you? Like, have you ever felt that pressure? Like, do you feel that pressure now, like with your job?
I think I felt it more in internship, of like proving myself and like really getting to know a bunch of people. But I think in this position that I have, at the moment, I don't feel a ton of pressure to outperform or anything like that. I definitely make sure that I do all of my tasks or whatever I make or head is done very well. Mm-hmm. But I also don't think I have as much of a, stress in regards to like proving myself. And I feel like proving myself was definitely something in internship. I think I like grappled with, and I would take on like a bunch of tasks and just, you know, do a lot of work, which maybe because I was like, oh, maybe they could give me a job, so I better like make sure you know that I leave a good impression,
and those impressions can take you a long way, so like it makes sense. But like I don't know, I feel like once I got hired, it's like, okay, now I can like be me again, because I feel like this, like you put on like a face, put on like a persona to like make sure that they get the best of you. Mm-hmm. Whatever your best self is, like that's who you walk in with. And like, and I'm not saying I'm not being my best self at work, but it's like there's no way, no one is on 10 like that 100% of the time. There's no way. I'm sorry.
You're not like performing anymore as you would in the interview, because the interviews are so performative. Yes. And we've talked about this before. Some people are extremely gifted in interviewing, but then when they actually get to the job and do the job, they're not great at it.
Yes. Yes.
You know, so I think it does. I thought about that as well, because I had a certain, right, you want to put your best foot forward, very professional vibe in the interview. And then now how I am, it's definitely a bit of a difference, because I'm not, you know, on all the time and using whatever words that show that I'm educated.
Oh, man. Yep. Oh, good morning. You know what I'm saying? Like saying greetings. Good morning, everybody. Like greetings. You know what I'm saying? I'm so happy to be here. Like, what's up? I'm here. You know?
Yeah, definitely. So you go in person. How has that shift been for you, you know, coming out of being pretty much all virtual last year?
Yes, yes. That was a big transition for me, because like I had to think about like, I have to think about the clothes that I wear, you know? And thankfully, with my position, they told us to dress down, because if you were in the other seat, you were the client and not the clinician, you wouldn't want somebody to come in suited and booted every single time, because that can come off a way. So in order to make sure that like clients don't feel a way when you meet with them, they say dress down. And then also we live in a metropolitan city, so if I need to run, I gotta wear something comfortable. So it's like, I'm happy that like there's not much of a dress code aside from like no shorts, you know, like no tank tops. But it's definitely been a transition, like bringing a mask, you know what I'm saying, wearing a mask, but then like, you know, I like finding a place to eat lunch, right? Sometimes I just eat lunch at my desk because like it's hot outside and there's no like shady tree to sit under. And then like also like interacting with my coworkers, and not everybody uses masks. Not everybody is vaccinated. I just got my booster shot. I got my booster shot from CVS the other day, and you know, I'm really happy about it. If you can, I would highly, highly suggest you do so. But it's definitely a transition because, you know, I feel like when this pandemic first started, we were much more regimented with like our cleaning and like sanitation, and like everybody was on everything needs to be clean mode. And it was scary, but it was necessary. And I feel like a lot of that fear has gone away, because, you know, people have like the option to get vaccinated and stuff. So, but even like going into restaurants to go get some food, right? Like, it's not nearly as like top tier clean as it used to be. It's definitely a transition. But like walking around the office, try to stay masked up. Except like if you go to the break room, like to get some water if there's food in there. It also makes it difficult to like interact with your coworkers too much because like everybody's like on the job, so it's like everybody's like doing stuff. So don't want to interrupt too much. And at the same time, I don't want, like me personally, I just don't want to share space with a lot of people all the time. Because similar to you, I'm still a little bit nervous about all of it. Even after getting my third dose of that Pfizer family. So I don't know. It's definitely helped me like readjust to just like life because I was definitely in Zoom University with you for like a year, right? And like the summers as well, like everything was online. So it's very, very interesting. Yeah. And you
I would just get like tired, I think, being around people every single day and then having to drive to work every single day. Like, I know that we used to do that, but now thinking about leaving my house to go sit somewhere else for my job on my computer, I'm like, what's the point?
Oh man.
But yeah, that's like I definitely what's it called? Like, you get tired from being in social situations. Like, I'm not that bad of a person when it comes to that. I don't necessarily get drained by large gatherings. But there is definitely a point after COVID where, you know, I don't know, being around people for too long definitely becomes tiresome.
Yeah, seriously. Fighting for my life on the 10 in the morning.
Oh no.
Fighting for my life.
No.
Singing along to any songs I can just to pass the time because it's a parking lot on that thing. Okay, so I've been thinking this and I'm glad that I finally have the platform to do so, to say this out loud. The I-10 is my least favorite freeway in Los Angeles. And I've decided that the 405 is my favorite freeway.
Really?
405 supremacy, okay?
Wow.
Yes, I'm saying it here. You know what I'm saying? You heard it here first. I'm not from Los Angeles. I don't know if my voice counts, but here in this setting, it counts. 10 sucks. 405 supremacy all day, every day.
LOL. Yeah, I mean, I live by the 10, but I believe it's 10 East going towards San Bernardino. So it's not that bad compared to probably the 10 by you, which is I think West Side.
10 West,
Yeah. I mean, people in LA drive horribly anyways. There's always
Horribly.
something on the freeway. There's always I mean, every situation with the freeway here and driving and traffic is just horrible.
Okay, you want to trade ride along stories?
You have a well, yours is a ride along. My ride along story is when I interned for LAPD, which all you listeners out there, it was interesting.
Yeah. Fuck them. Sorry. Sorry. I know it's just your internship. It had nothing to do with you, but
Yeah, everybody out there, I couldn't pick. They just placed me there, and you know, I did not have a choice at the time, unfortunately. But yeah, we could talk about your ride along. I also want to talk about like checks and getting our money straight mm-hmm. and all of that too. But mm-hmm. your ride along story is pretty good.
Oh, yeah. So with my position as a basically a traveling clinician, we often go see clients at their place of residence. And I shadowed some clinicians at my job, and shout out to them. They gave me a lot of good game. They really did. But at the same time, like on that same note, we were saying that people in LA just don't know how to drive. We were literally at a red light, and we were going to turn left onto the freeway, and we had the left arrow, and it was red. And the person I was riding with looked at me, looked at the freeway, and said, "You know, I know it's red, but I'm going to go anyway." And I'm just sitting in the passenger seat like, "Oh my God. Hey, what? Like, you're just going to put me at risk? Like, my door is going to see incoming traffic." I was so scared. That being said, another person I was riding with, we're just talking back and forth, and like just talking, ran straight through a light. Again, I'm just in the passenger seat like, "Oh my God. It's not the time, it's not the setting, but like noted. I could have died today." Either way, it's really interesting being like removing myself and bringing myself to people's places of residence, because you just see how they live, where they live, their environment, all the above. And like talking to the clinicians that I was shadowing, one person that we visited, I had to get primed, basically said like, "Listen, when she sees you, she's gonna cry and scream. She might say something racist because she has racist tendencies, you know. But don't let that what's it called deter you. Just listen, just watch how I do, watch how I interact with her." And sure enough, we walked into her building, sat down in her home, immediately started crying and screaming about anything and everything. And like, again, like, they're just people. They're just people. So, like, people are complicated, and they're always going to be complicated. But it's so interesting, like, meeting the clients instead of, like, reading about or hearing about the clients, right? Because, like, in the system, like, they'll have like, a diagnosis for, like, major depression or, like, bipolar disorder with, like, high anxiety or something like that, you know? And you just read the person's name, you read their diagnosis, you read what other clinicians did with them, you hear what the medicine that they're on, because the doctors, we work with the doctors to like prescribe medicine to them and stuff. And then after all that, like, call that person, and it's like, "Oh, it's not just the bipolar lady from the computer, right? It's Sarah. This is Sarah. I'm talking to a person named Sarah." It was really eye-opening, and it's been a really eye-opening experience, because I finally have my part of my caseload. It's not full yet, but they I mean, again, they're just people. Like, and some of these people are going through a lot of stuff, right? Like, all their traumas are like logged into our system, and you know, they're just people. They're just living. I'm about to be a new person in their life. So it's been a very, what's the word? Maybe grounding. The word is grounding, because it feels like it was a lot of theory before, and now it's like all of this. All right, just talk to that person that you've been reading about and like build a relationship with them. So,
yeah, I was going to ask you, because we did have in field that question of, or a hypothetical, if you are a clinician and you do home visits and, you know, this person has some like hate symbol outside of their home.
Yes.
What do you do? So my question is, like, with you and your experiences, like, how do you take care of yourself? Like, does it ever affect you? How do you like deal with that?
Yeah. I remember that question too. I remember the argument that we got into in class, like, you, not you and me, but like my class, like.
Yeah, I wasn't in that class, everybody.
Man.
I don't know what happened.
Man, all I have to say is, if you are a school clinician and you walk to somebody's home because somebody's kid is acting up, and mom opens the door and there's a Nazi flag on the wall, what do you do? Me personally, I'm black. That woman she's not going to hear a word I have to say. I'm not going to sit through anything for the good of somebody else. There's no way. My life is more important to me than this job. I'm sorry. So I don't know, like the clinician that I shadowed that day, mm-hmm. He kind of brushed it off. Like, he basically said, you know, it's whatever. She don't know what she's talking about. And all right, she may not, but like, also she said something really wild. So like, you let that slide, like you tell your supervisor about it. And I don't know, like, I probably would ask, like, if I could probably like do, or like get switched out, or like have that person switch to somebody else, because I don't know if I can in good faith like be the best version of myself, if that is like a possibility of like any type of like racism during the job. Like, I don't have to deal with that. Like, no, like I don't have to be everybody's therapist, you know, they can have somebody else. I don't know.
I agree. I mean, I think for both of the, you know, individuals benefit, because one is the client really going to listen to you, be able to like take in what you're saying, you know, I don't know. And then on top of it, you're on the other end of it. And there's also like transference and counter transference happening. Some people might argue, oh, this could be like a healing relationship, because they could see like, I don't know, another side of someone. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like, are you going to put yourself in that situation and be that relationship? Because that could also be a slippery slope of toxicity.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree. I don't know. And there is such thing as doing things for the greater good. Yeah. I just don't think it's worth it, though. I don't think it's worth it. I don't know.
Yeah, because the greater, the client's greater good and your greater good.
Yeah.
Could be. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, man. But yeah, it's been it's been very, very grounding, and it's a reminder that, like, even if it feels like the world stopped because of this pandemic, the world definitely did not stop. It just changed a little bit more, and we just gotta adjust with it.
Yeah.
And again, I've said this before, you've said this before, I'm so tired of this thing. I'm so tired of wearing masks. I'm so tired of the fear. But, you know, we will keep it pushing, right? Like, gotta keep living.
We're just gonna adapt to this new way of life and see what happens.
My bad, go ahead.
No, what were you gonna say?
I was gonna switch the subject. I think you mentioned before that you were one of the younger people that worked at your job.
Yes, I am. I'm not the youngest, I don't think. But it's an interesting space to be in, because most of my coworkers are mothers. They have children that are various ages, from like middle school to, you know, going to school for the first time. And then on top of it, the space that I'm in, which definitely needs to go through a metamorphosis, because right now it's a lot of, I would say, older white females occupying the space. Maybe I shouldn't use females, women occupying the space. And, you know, I think there's just a lot more in the arts education advocacy space in regards to perspectives of people of color and what's important to them, and how art is crucial and healing and just like an integral part of education. So for myself, I just feel like there needs to be more inclusion and more connection in regards to like resources. Like, one of the main things I do is help people to get public funding for arts education. And the schools that are most in need are schools that are in lower socioeconomic environments, places. And as we know, by data and history, the people that are affected by that are people of color. Yeah, it's been very interesting, but I am one of the youngest people in that space, and it has been challenging at times, because there are microaggressions that happen, and things have been done a certain way, and things need to like be adapted, and new voices and younger minds need to be included and taken seriously in the conversation.
So it sounds like sometimes they don't all the way hear you out for your ideas and your contributions.
Not in my team. No, not like where I work. They're very good at listening and, you know, taking in what I have to say and everything. But when I get into other meetings or spaces, yeah, at times it can be difficult to speak up or just like finding the right way to like interact in the meeting.
I'm definitely one of the younger people in my job too. Advocating for self is so important, right? In any situation you can. It's weird because it feels like everywhere I've ever worked, interned, etc., people always would say, like, yeah, we want to get some young, fresh ideas, young minds, you know what I'm saying, new perspectives. But then, like, the follow-through with that isn't as, it's not, they're not as excited about it when it comes to like following through with like new minds and new perspectives and new ideas.
They don't actually like put it into action.
Yes. Like we want to have, give you all a space to have, like your voices heard, blah, blah, blah. Cool. Hey, we're bringing in some young minds, new perspectives to have your voices heard. Cool. All right. We got something to say. And it's like, well, if you look at it from our perspective, I feel like that's always an interesting thing, and I feel like it's always been a part of my professional experience too, like trying to advocate for myself, especially when I feel like I'm not respected by my older coworkers. But it's a different type of respect that I'm trying to, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, for myself, like, my coworkers definitely respect me. It's like the other players in the field randomly, like, you just find yourself in these situations. And I do think there's a lot of, like, rhetoric around, yeah, youth engagement, we need young minds. But then I think you're right, like, when we actually think of, well, are you actually listening? And then on top of it, are you actually like giving the power to these voices,
right,
in a way that is meaningful, impactful, and equitable, that like we can actually have change? And I think that's the problem. That at times it's like just kind of for show, and then people don't follow through in actually like allocating power or giving up power.
Yeah.
And the dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah. Power and time, like all of that. It's not enough to like lift voices up. There has to be some sort of like, all right, and as we discussed in our last meeting, we're going to do this, or like, we're going to make a focus on this. Like, we heard what you said with the survey, and we're going to implement this. Like, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, even things like my organization, which I think is amazing, like pays every intern pays any speaker, student speaker, and pays like a good rate and price. And that's how it should be.
For sure.
Like things like that too, yeah, go a long way, where other organizations, you know, other experiences I've been a part of, you know, they don't pay, or they just like think they can use people's time and kind of just use someone's ideas or voice as like, look at what we're doing, it's so great, you know.
And I feel like a lot of that is being the student. I feel like a lot of that is like around school culture. It's like, well, the students will figure it out, they're students, you know. And it's like, yes, the students are always going to be like the superstars of the school, but then like also like give credit wherever credit is due. And credit may not be a paycheck, but like it's got to be some sort of type of credit, you know, something just to show for like the effort that people put in.
Yeah, it's super valuable. And I think if you really want to do like youth engagement and development work, and you're like centering DEI and REI practices, like you also have to put your money where your mouth is, like really showing and teaching kids, like, you know what, your voice matters, you know, your time matters, it has a price, and you should be paid for it. Like the whole like education thing where they're like, oh yeah, well, you're getting school credit and stuff like that, this is not an equitable practice.
Well, you get an experience is so valuable. It's
like it is, but like
it is,
it's free labor, like call it what it is, it's totally honestly is free labor.
Yep,
it's free labor. But anyways, we're talking about money. So we gotta bring up the paychecks. How's the paychecks going? How's like the whole thinking of finance going at this point?
So I got my first paycheck about a week and a half ago, and it was only for 2 days, but like, you know what, I got paid for 2 days of work. That's tight, because that wasn't happening before. Right. Okay, so Friday the second paycheck comes, and that's when you know we're really in there. So I'm really excited to see what this looks like. I have an idea of how much it's gonna be, but you know, want to see it for my own eyes. And yeah, like being paid for your labor is a good thing, man. Not gonna lie, it feels good to know that I got money coming in, and like I can pay my rent without stressing about it, you know. Like, yeah, it's a good feeling. I know that you've been at it for more than a month now.
Yes, I have several paychecks. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Talk to us. How you feeling about it? You deserve more. Let me tell you, like off top, I already know you deserve more. That being said,
more. Yeah, it's been good because I've been in school for a very long time. So finally, like getting paid for my time and my work has been just a different experience that I didn't experience before. I mean, I was a hostess in New York City, so I had, you know, jobs and things like that, but the type of job where I'm like on my computer making money, doing like what I learned to do in school and getting paid for it, I had not experienced yet. So it's a big like accomplishment and relief for me. But I'm also, I don't know, just being in like more of a scarcity mindset, I still have tendencies of like guilt if I, you know, spend money on just like something that I want that is not necessarily like I need to have it.
Right.
And you know, I kind of have this like relationship with that just because of my experience and not having had like paycheck after paycheck come in like in this type of setting. So I've been like grappling with that, but also I've been trying to think of ways for my money to work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I get really excited about thinking about that and like researching that type of stuff. So I did download Public. It's an app. It's pretty cool. It's like Twitter combined with Robinhood. So it's an investing app, and you can follow different people. You get a news feed of like what's going on. You can follow different stocks, things like that. And so I've been kind of like, I would say, dipping my toes into like the finance and investing world and watching a lot of different YouTubes sound like my mom. I've been watching a lot of different YouTubes.
Googles
on investing. And one thing that I've taken away is index funds. So I invested some in index fund, and I plan every single time I get a paycheck to continue to have a portion that I invest in index funds. We could go more into it later if anybody has any questions about this. You know, you can DM us or DM me. But yeah, I'm very excited about it because these are like the secrets that the wealthy know about.
Yes.
And it's really like incredible that if I just start investing now in certain things, that in the long run, my money potential of growth of just sitting in that is, I mean, incredible.
Yeah. It's like, and it's like, it's new because like you didn't even have like the space to do stuff like this before, you know?
No. I didn't really think, I knew that there was going to be a point in my life when I would sit down and do the research. And I always was interested in the stock market. Like my dad would trade stocks and things like that here and there. But I didn't really understand the ins and outs. So I'm really excited about it. And I think it's definitely something that everybody should take some time to research and kind of decide if they want to do that or get like a financial planner or advisor at some point. But I get really excited actually about that stuff and looking at, you know, my money has increased by like whatever percentage today, just by, you know, putting it in this index fund.
Yep. And your credit score is going up.
One thing though, I have always been on game with my credit score.
Beautiful.
My credit score has always, but that's because I had a parent that did like said, here's what you need to do with your credit card, or opened me a credit card earlier. So my credit history has been for a long time as well. So that's also one thing, getting your credit score right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Changes a lot.
Yes.
Credit scores are anti-black, but we will, you know what I'm saying? It's a system that I have to use because I live here. But yeah, credit scores really suck. And even if like, it feels like, it's like, hey man, we noticed that you owe a lot of money. So we're not so sure that you can pay for things. And it's like, okay, yeah, I went to school. My bad. You know what I'm saying? I apologize for like, but yeah. You gotta do it.
That's interesting because you and I we've talked about this off air, but similar amounts, which are large amounts,
man,
of debt.
So much debt.
But certain credit cards, yeah, they're not gonna let you open because you like have X amount of debt. But I've not been affected credit score wise due to my amount of mountainous debt.
Yes.
But yeah, that's so interesting. I wish like we could go like more in depth about it. But it's definitely, I mean, race is for sure.
Yeah. Cause like it just says that you have a history of paying for things on time, which kind of assumes that like you've always had money to pay for things. And if not everybody has like the same amount of like basis or just like proof of history of it, right? Because like you have to build your credit score. That's the other thing. I remember when I first got a credit card, like they give you like the starter one that's like your limit is like what, $300 or something like that. And so, like, you know, increasing your credit limit all depends on your credit score, you know? So, like, say you use half that, you use $200 on that $300 credit score. Now it's like, oh, whoa, what's going on with your credit here? And it's like, it's really not that much money that I owe, but because the limit is $300, it looks a certain way. So it's like, it's so dumb, but like, it's necessary, because when you have good credit, you can, you just have opportunities to do other things, and, you know, but yeah.
Yeah, you should, I mean, you should check the YouTubes. I'm telling you, I'm telling you, like, YouTube is just amazing. Like, there's so many people that are making great content and videos on, like, just do this and this in order to, like, you know, increase your credit score, or to, like, invest, or to land that job. And, like, I'm telling you, like, definitely check it out, because I feel like there are certain things that, you know, you could do, or we all could do, to, like, help help our financial situations.
Definitely. You know, all right, so, like, last question, when it comes to, like, your job, your relationships, your social self, like, your own self-care, how do you know when you're at your limit?
When I'm at my limit, that's a great question. If you have an answer before me, please go ahead, because I feel like you already know.
Man, I know that I get in my head a lot when I'm at my limit. Like, I stop communicating. And I get, like, tunnel vision on whatever task I feel like is most pertinent at the time. And it's just like, I don't know, don't care, I got to do this. Like, I haven't heard from them, I haven't talked to them, but, like, I got to do this because this is most important right now. I got to get this thing done. And it takes a bit to, like, get out of that, like, to get out of my head once I, like, get into my head. So. That's when I recognize, like, within myself, it's like, yo, are you still taking care of yourself? You know what I'm saying? Like, have you gone outside? Have you breathed some fresh air? You know what I'm saying? Like, when's the last time you did something to make yourself, like, just a little bit happier, right? Like, when are you hanging out with you, right? All right, before Corona, BC. In the land of BC, I used to take myself to movies all the time, just go by myself. It's like, yo, don't gotta wait on nobody. Like, I can catch any movie. I didn't have to like convince anybody that it's gonna be good. Just like, bang, take myself to a movie. So, like, that was something I always used to do, like, when I knew when I was at my limit. Or just, like, go drive around and, like, here while when I'm in LA, I drive around and look for murals. Try to get some pictures, like, write down, like, cross streets, because there's so many good ones. But, like, I know I'm at my limit when I recognize that I haven't done anything for myself in forever. So it's like, yo, schedule some time to hang out with you, you know, more of the juggling, but necessary juggling.
Those are all, like, good suggestions and thoughts. I think for myself, if I start feeling like a shell of a person, or like cardboard, that makes sense. Like, I just get really maybe tired and I don't feel as motivated. That's when I'm like, okay, what's going on? And working out helps. Sometimes I don't feel like going to the gym, but I know if I just push myself to go, I will feel better. And it just helps me to, like, change my mindset, my scenery, everything like that. So, yeah, I would say that. I'm trying to think of, like, what else. Yeah, I just have to, like, maintain that. I'm pretty good at, like, continuing behaviors. And I know that for myself. So if I just like maintain my workout schedule and I also like try to eat well too. Yeah. And also like I sleep. Like I don't care. I sleep. I will sleep in. I like it's so basic, but that's pretty much what it is. That's what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, sleeping is underrated. I don't care. Sleeping is underrated and so necessary. You know, I really feel it when I haven't got it. So hey, I feel you.
I can't function. I can't do it. But I think maybe for next episode, we'll get into maybe more like student loans and such. Fine. But I have some tips and some knowledge to share with the audience and especially the public service loan forgiveness program, which we discussed. So we'll save that for the next episode. But you know what time it is.
What time is it?
Let me put you on.
I love that jingle. It was nice. All right. Would you like to introduce it for those who, if this is your first listen with us?
You've made it this far.
Right. Yeah, if you've made it this far.
Thank you. So we play a little game where we just put each other on to whatever's kind of giving us life. It can be movies, it could be music, it could be a book, it could be, you know, whatever, food, anything that's like giving us some life.
All right, I can go first. Let me put you on. I watched all of Squid Game on Netflix. Man,
he's been dying to watch that. I'm like, no, I'm good.
Man, if you have high anxiety, this will make your anxiety higher. Let me tell you. That being said, invested. 9 episodes.
Wow.
9 episodes. Close to like 45 minutes, maybe 50. But that's a good show, man. It's good. It's gonna make you upset. It's gonna make you so upset, but like it's good. And I don't wanna say anything else because Squid Game.
Okay. I have a few things. I don't know if I said this last time, but I'll say it again. I watched Candyman in theaters.
How was it?
It was great. It was so good. I highly recommend to go see it. Jordan Peele, I think, is a producer on it. And it definitely fuses like that horror, like tall tales and like comments on race. It's so good. It's so good. And then I've been watching Blood and Water on Netflix, and it takes place in South Africa, and I'm hooked. It's good. It's like we all know what's gonna happen, or like we all know like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I don't want to ruin it for people, but it's really, really good. And it's cool to see like South Africa and just like all the different people and the culture too. So I highly recommend.
Okay. I got one more for you as well. Jameson, JMSN, songer, singwriter, legend from Michigan. He put out an album called Heals Me. I feel like in terms of white guys that do blues or like R&B, he's my top one. Yes, respect the Midwest legend. It's so good too. Oh my God. And I will preface this by saying that I am a huge fan of Jameson. So it's like in my eyes, he can do no wrong anyway, but his new one is good. Heals Me, check that out. Black and white album cover, it's so tight. Like I don't know. But yeah, yo, well, thank you all for listening if you made it this far. Once again, we are Implicitly Awkward. Follow us on Instagram at Implicitly Awkward. Follow us on Twitter at Implicitly Awk, AWK, Implicitly Awk. And if you want some amazing merchandise, check out our website, implicitlyawkward.bigcartel.com. Yeah.
Yeah. And hopefully Instagram and Facebook and all of them won't be crashing, because that's what happened today. You yes, know what day that is? That's the day we're recording this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was Implicitly Awkward.
All right. Welcome back to Implicitly Awkward, everybody. I'm one of your hosts, Marcus.
I'm your other host, Alexia.
We have a very special episode lined up for you today. But before we start, just want to say rest in peace to everybody we lost at Asheville World over the weekend. It's a terrible situation. And we hope that everything can be made right and soon in a way that makes a lot of sense for everybody. But that being said, Alexia, would you like to introduce our guest?
Yes, definitely. So our special guest today is Obi.
Hi.
So Obi is actually my partner. And what's so amazing about him and so cool is that he is in the STEM and tech field. So to kind of give the folks a little background, how did you like first start out knowing that, you know, you're kind of good at math and science growing up?
I think, well, my background, so both my parents are Nigerian, and I was born in the States. And if you know anything about Nigerian parents, they heavily emphasize education and career. So for me growing up, it was, you know, you get good grades and like, that's what you're supposed to do. And because of that, I kind of just gravitated towards math and science. And that's what I started noticing that I was good at through middle school and then through high school. And then eventually, you know, I had to figure out what I was going to do for college. And since I was in Atlanta at the time, Georgia Tech is one of the best schools for engineering and math and science. So that's where I ended up going, kind of just because I was kind of going with the flow and going with what I was good at, but not so much because I knew that my passion lied with engineering.
That's super interesting. I know you've like told me this off air, but you didn't apply to that many schools.
No. I think mostly because like I was super lazy as a high schooler, and I didn't have like a strong interest to, I guess I just didn't really know what I was trying to do. And I was like, let me apply to Georgia Tech because like that's the best at what I'm currently good at. And then let me apply to a couple other schools in state because that's all I can really afford. And I was kind of lucky that my parents emphasized that I wanted to keep my college debt to a minimum. So in-state was really the only option for me.
So getting into engineering and tech, recognize that can be a very, very, what's the word? Isolating space for someone who isn't white. So can you talk about that experience and like what that was like for you being in school for all that?
Yeah. I think I went to a Catholic school, and most of the classes I was in had like mostly white folks. Like every now and again, you know, there'd be another Nigerian or another black person in my classes, but I was kind of conditioned to just know that, hey, there's not going to be too many folks that look like me. And then when I went to Georgia Tech, it was more of the same pretty much. So I think because early on I was like used to it. It was something that still I was like, damn, like I wish there were more black folks that were learning the same things as I was. But I was kind of conditioned to like know how to deal with it. But I will say, you know, those rare occurrences where you would run into somebody that looked like you that was in your class, like I was a breath of fresh air, you know, like a lot of my close lifelong friends that I met at Georgia Tech were also other black folks who are in STEM. So that was, you know, I think we all kind of like hyped up and helped each other kind of get through that program because it was a tough one.
That's amazing. So did you ever have like moments like feeling like an outsider, or did you really just like be able to find community in regards to like all of you being into, you know, STEM or engineering?
I think I guess to my answer is a little bit all over the place, but because my parents kind of made me believe that like I was good enough, you know, to excel in math and science, I never really had an inferiority complex when it came to like knowing that I would graduate, knowing that I would succeed. But when I did kind of shift my focus from engineering to what I currently do now, like software development, that I really felt like kind of a wave of like intimidation, a wave of like, I don't really know if I belong here. Because for context, I decided to be a mechanical engineer when I went to Georgia Tech. And I was just kind of going along for the ride, not really knowing what I would do with my career, but figuring it out as I would go. And my calling card was like, let me just make sure I have the best grades I can possible. And hopefully I can find a job, have, you know, a decent, stable career and achieve this American dream that everybody's been selling me. And so after my freshman and sophomore year, I had like, you know, really good grades, but I couldn't get any type of internship. And internships at Georgia Tech were huge because, you know, that's how kind of folks got their feet set and decided where they would want to take their career. But the big reason I wasn't getting any internships is because I couldn't explain why I wanted to work anywhere. Because I didn't care. I didn't really care about what I was doing at the time. And 3.5 years into my college career, I was like, okay, I kind of have to figure this out. Otherwise, I would have wasted my money or I'm going to end up being miserable doing something. Luckily, early on, I was able to land internships. And that kind of made me like wake up to the fact that like, hey, mechanical engineering is a good, stable career, but it seems like the path to level up within this space isn't as like rosy and like vertical as I thought it was. It seems like very slow and methodical. And like, I don't know how I'm supposed to achieve this American dream that y'all have been selling me, you know, working at the same company for 20 years and really not increasing my skills or really not even increasing like my salary along the way too. And I think a big wake up call for me was the second internship I did. I worked at a power company in Florida, and them trying to kind of hype up working there full time. They were explaining how like, oh, if you develop a patent for the company, then we give you like, you know, a $5,000 raise and you get a plaque. And I'm like, yo, $5,000 is nothing to what's it called?
To throw away.
Yeah, there's nothing to throw away. It's something to be proud of. But you developed a whole entire patent for this massive company. And for them, that $5,000 is like pennies.
Yeah, you got to know your worth.
Right. So I'm thinking like, some of these folks have been in the lab for like 5 years at a time, you know, grinding on like these crazy electrical systems, and they just have a plaque to show for it. And that's when I was like, nah, I can't, there's no way, like, there's no way I'm going to, you know, put myself through that. So that's when after that internship is when I really started to try and figure, I guess, kind of like a way out or an alternative path. And I started trying to think about what I was passionate about. And at the time it was fitness, as we had started a fitness club at Georgia Tech, but I didn't really know how to apply that because I was like, I don't want to be a trainer. I don't want to open a gym. I don't really see many examples of like folks looking like me and being like super successful doing those things. So on a whim, I took a startup class at Georgia Tech. And in that class, they kind of opened my eyes to what it looked like to start your own business or do something for yourself outside of the traditional path that was rolled out for you with school. I don't remember what y'all originally asked me, but that's kind of how I deviated from my initial path going to Georgia Tech.
Regardless of what we said, that was a good answer. A. B, like, for 5 G's, develop a whole patent for somebody else, or just do it for yourself. You know what I'm saying? Like, cause it's crazy how like, if, like you have one skill and you let the good folks know that you have a skill, they'll try to like use that and use it and abuse it until you, and you'll have nothing to show for it. So I'm glad you said no, because that's crazy.
I almost feel sometimes that like, whether it's intentionally or unintentionally, the way some of these like career or like industries are set up, maybe so much the way like school is set up, they don't really open your eyes to like a non-traditional route or non-traditional path. And you just kind of feel like you have to go somewhere. You, first of all, you feel like you have to get a degree. And then you also feel like you have to go somewhere and like work at this job for 10, 15, 20 years. And then, you know, just hope you achieve this American dream. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of folks, that's possible. It takes a long time, but for, you know, because of that, like it's harder to follow whatever passions that you have. So that kind of like made me really try and readjust the way I thought about things and shift where my career was headed.
Mm-hmm. And so I kind of want to like speak about, because I know you pretty well and I know your culture really has a lot of like influence on who you are as a person and how you move through the world, and also why you decided to go into engineering. And I heard you speak a lot about the American dream. And I know we've talked about this before, but for you, like, did you ever feel as if maybe you were going to let your parents down if you didn't follow this linear path with mechanical engineering?
Yeah. I think for a long time, I guess when I had made that shift in my mentality after my second internship at that power company, I kind of knew and was dead set on, hey, I want to start a fitness startup. I was working on one with my friend at the time. And we had charted out kind of a whole idea and a whole path to how we were going to make money and everything. But I was really nervous to kind of reveal that to my parents and kind of let them know that this is the thing I'm prioritizing. Because I think, you know, the model that they, the only model that they knew to success in America was through education, through a stable job. So for me to say like, hey, I've been, you put me through a private school and worked like crazy to do it. And then, you know, I went to Georgia Tech and I got into this, you know, competitive school. And now I'm not going to do the thing that like y'all immigrated here for and like, you know, supported along the way. So it took, for me, it took some like, one, I had to like prove that I had a plan. And then two, like I had to also kind of like make them aware that this is a path that even if you don't make it doing a tech startup, you have many opportunities outside of like your the business that you're starting. And I think for me, like having the support of my parents helped out a lot when it came to them being like, hey, we're going to get off your ass about not taking, you know, that job at the power company in Florida and deciding to kind of, you know, be broke for 3 years and work on a startup, because we understand that you have a plan. And even if that plan fails, you have a backup plan.
Yeah, you have really valuable skills that you've learned along the way. And I think you said something really beautiful too, that like your parents instilled in you that you were smart enough, that you were like worthy of these things, that like you, well, right, it's like you're either engineer, a lawyer, or a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So like that ideology, like that belief, I think is so strong in regards to like pushing someone through, because I feel like in America, a lot of the times, at least like in my experience, like I didn't see that many like Latina lawyers or things like that, you know? And I feel like when your parents kind of show you that, or you see things like that, then it really helps for you to be like, yeah, I am good at math, or yeah, I am good at like whatever subject it is, and I can be that. So that's like something that I thought was really beautiful that you said.
Yeah. And just adding to that real quick, I think, again, I feel like I'm very blessed and lucky that I was, you know, born into a family that like valued education, and I was born, you know, a Nigerian, because there's so many examples for me as of other Nigerians that are like crushing it. And I, you know, not everybody can say that. So like, I'm definitely very privileged and lucky to have that.
Shout out to our MVP Giannis. You know what I'm saying? He might be the Greek freak, but he's very Nigerian. Let's not get it twisted. It's a whole different story for a whole different, but yeah. But yeah, it's crazy because I have a lot of friends who are children of immigrants, and I've heard very similar stories about like engineer, doctor, or lawyer, pick one. And if you don't, what the hell? What are you doing? You know? So it's not my experience, but it seems like a universal experience for children of immigrants, from what I've seen at least. What do y'all think?
So if the listeners don't know, we're both children of immigrants. I'm child on my mom's side. My mom immigrated from El Salvador. Yeah, it's a lot of pressure sometimes, you know. I feel very much like I have to do things like excellent and like perfect and like take every opportunity because, you know, my mom went through a lot to like be where we are today. And I don't want to like ever have that in vain. And I also like, yeah, I want to just make sure that I utilize every opportunity. I can't just like let it go or be lazy about it.
Yeah, 100%. There's definitely like a, I feel like a survival mentality when it comes going through your career too. Even if, whether it's you're working for a company or like you're doing your own thing, there's this feeling of like, exactly what Alexia says, like you have to capitalize on every single opportunity. And, you know, kind of like tell my story a little bit more. When I started my startup after I graduated, it was me and my best friend, Keith. And
shout out
to Keith. And we both did, you know, Keith is also a child of immigrant, you know, his dad was Nigerian. And we both were like, listen, now is like the time. We're both young. If we want to try and see if this startup has legs and we can do something with it, like now's the time. But the obstacle and challenge for us is that, like, you know, we're broke because we just graduated college and we didn't know how to code, but we were doing a technical startup. So the mentality of like, you know, we have to survive, we have to learn how to code, we have to build this startup, we have to do it in time before we run out of food, basically. I think that helped us both grow. And so now, you know, both of us are full-time software engineers. And I don't know if that would have happened if we didn't have the urgency that we did when we were working on our startup.
You know, shout out to Keith and shout out to personal growth. Because look at you now. There's enough food, right?
Yeah, there's, yeah.
Yeah, we went to Trader Joe's last week, so.
Yeah, we sucked up the fridge for sure. So during that whole like transition period, or also, you know, while in engineering school, like, was there any like key mentors, or did like mentorship play a key role in kind of like helping you?
Yeah. I look at my reflect on my story, and I think I've been very blessed and very lucky to just run into the right people and be around the right people. As much as I kind of have a feeling about you know, traditional education, going to Georgia Tech opened me up to have a lot of these different connections that I have. And mentors, and having good mentors is definitely something that came from going to Georgia Tech. So my biggest mentor is also like my business partner, Daniel Ye. He went to Georgia Tech. I hit him up way back when I was a sophomore there because he helped us out with the fitness club that we had over there. And he's been a mentor for me up until this day. The startup program that we were in at Georgia Tech, we had a ton of mentors there. One of them was Keith McGregor. He was the first person that told Keith and I, like, bro, you bros can code. Like, you guys are smart enough to do this. And at the time, we were trying to find like people to pay to build our app for us. But when he was like, you guys can do this, we were like, shit, yeah, I guess we can do this. The internet is a massive mentor because there's like nothing but other people in your same, like the internet is nothing but other people in your same position that are also teaching themselves how to do things and hyping up each other, big upping each other, helping each other find solutions to things. That was a godsend. I mean, I don't know how I would have learned how to code without the internet.
Yeah, because you taught yourself how to code.
Yeah.
Like, did you ever take any like formal classes?
I took because I was a mechanical engineer, there were some classes where you got exposure to coding, but when it comes to like the type of coding I did now, that I had to figure out alongside Keith. And I would say we were each other's mentors as well, because having someone that's at the same position in life as you are with the same goal that you have, that really makes it easy to keep going. Because there would be days that you wouldn't feel like,
very true,
you would feel a certain type of way. You know, there'd be days I feel a certain type of way, but we both knew that we were in it together.
That's awesome.
Very true. That's very, very true. In my personal experience, a lot of my mentors and the people who I've considered mentors have been really good about helping me learn how to code switch in the necessary situations. How has code switching affected your journey, and how necessary you found it?
Yeah, I would definitely say it depends on like who I'm talking to. Like,
there it is.
Yeah, I think the most difficult thing for me early on was that like I didn't have a lot of like the words to use to like prove that I knew I could do whatever job or task that you wanted me to do as a software engineer, because I didn't go the traditional route and because I had to teach myself how to code. I was just kind of doing shit, but not really like knowing how to explain it. So over time, like, you know, talking with more software engineers, like being able to kind of code switch and explain things to somebody differently than how I'd explain it to my homie Keith, that paid dividends, especially now that my career is more focused on doing work for other people as opposed to myself.
So for people that don't know about like coding and like the opportunities for coding, especially let's say someone doesn't want to take the traditional route with, you know, going to university, etc., can you just like give a little snapshot on like the coding world and the possibility there, especially with like minorities and things like that?
Yeah. I think there's a lot of untapped opportunity when it comes to coding for, especially for minorities. And I think the biggest reason is because to make a decent hourly rate wage or to make a decent salary, you don't have to go to a four-year institution to learn. It does help. I'm not going to lie and say like, you know, going to Georgia Tech didn't help me have the confidence, and having Nigerian parents and all these things didn't help me have the confidence to sit down and learn how to code. But I mean, the internet is like, there's so much shit on the internet. There's so much stuff on the internet that makes it more accessible to learn how to do this stuff. So for somebody that is kind of like is really thinking about it, I think the advice that I would give is you can go multiple routes. You can sit down and teach yourself, or you can do coding boot camps. So they have different companies and different organizations do them, but these coding boot camps are usually between like 12 and 16 weeks. And they basically teach you the fundamentals of whatever avenue you're thinking about going down for coding, whether it be mobile development or web development or backend development. And they cost about, you know, I think some cost like $5,000, some might cost like $10,000, you know, compared to a four-year degree, which might cost you $200,000-$300,000 by the time you're done with it. That can be a big money saver, especially when you look at the upside of what you can make as a software developer. But you know, after you get done with those boot camps, so the work doesn't really stop there. And so the advice that I give to other people and that people have given me is, if you have a desire to make a career as a software developer, having a great portfolio is super important. And after you kind of get a good understanding of those fundamentals, I would try and immediately work on something that you're passionate about, any type of project, because you're more likely to continue learning and continue trying to figure stuff out when you're maybe building a personal website, maybe working on some app for some idea that you had. Even if that doesn't take off and you don't make money from it, you're likelier to complete that and finish it and learn what you need to learn to get that next job so you can start making some money.
Do you mind just giving like a range so people kind of understand, like, if let's say this boot camp costs like $5,000 or $10,000, is it worth it, you know, for the like hourly or like salary that you could potentially make as a coder?
I would say it depends. Excuse me. I think it depends on the boot camp. Some boot camps are better than others, so you definitely want to do your research. Usually when folks go to boot camps, I haven't been to one, so you know, do your research and verify if what I'm saying is true or not. But usually when folks complete boot camps, the first job that they get is kind of like an entry level junior software developer job, or they work as a contractor for somebody. And I've been contracting for the last 4 years, and I like it because you don't, at a lot of these tech companies, there's a lot more barriers in the way that if you didn't go to school as a software engineer, it makes it difficult to get through these abstract, like hyper technical interviews mm-hmm. that don't really reflect what you do day to day. So getting a contracting job or getting a freelance job gives you an opportunity to make probably between 40 to $90 an hour. And, you know, you get to learn a lot of different stuff because you're working on different contracts here and there.
So there's money to be made, but you got to invest in yourself to do so.
Yeah.
And there's ample like opportunity because you tend to get like people hitting you up on LinkedIn and different ways to do different projects. So I, from what you say, cause I'm not in the field of coding or STEM or anything like that, but it just seems like there's so much opportunity and like good pay that BIPOC people, you know, if you're listening, you might want to think about it.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll add while we're talking about salary, even if you want something more stable, like, you know, working for a big tech company or even a small tech company, I just 2 years ago, I learned like what you can actually make, like working at Google, and it blew my damn mind. I had like, just go on websites like levels.fyi, I think, or even on Glassdoor to see what some of these software engineers are making at these big tech companies. Mm-hmm. And it's like, nobody really tells you that like, that's a possibility. But once you know that, and if that's something that you care to do, then you can start kind of setting up your career trajectory to achieve that goal.
Makes sense. Yeah. Because they make bank. More bank than you expect. Let's put it that way.
It's and, you know, money's not everything. And I think for everybody is different. You know, for me personally, I'm still trying to decide if I want to go the big tech company route. But for folks who, you know, they might have multiple people to support or things that they want to achieve, just knowing that that's like a career path that you don't need to have a four-year degree to get to, I think that's important.
Yeah. Super important. Like that really levels the playing field in a way of like you not having to go to university or things like that. I think that that's like an equitable access point, you know, that you can kind of just be like, yeah, I can take this and there's ample opportunity and I get paid well. Like you got to hustle, but at the same time, like I think that that's a really great opportunity. But I guess shifting gears into entrepreneurship. So you have a company called Fit Genie, and that was what you were coding and creating with Keith.
Yeah.
Shout out to Keith.
Shout out to Keith. Great. Yes. Yeah. We had dinner with him and his girlfriend. Yeah. Wonderful. I like him a lot.
Yeah. Keith's the homie. I guess after we graduated, we started working on Fit Genie, which is a shout out to the merch right here.
You see it. You see
the merch.
Yeah, Alexi's wearing the merch for people listening. But it's basically a nutrition app. And now we're kind of going into healthy meal delivery. Because I've been doing contract work side by side with this, my contract work has kind of taken more of my focus. And Fit Genie is definitely a passion project because that's like literally where I cut my teeth. So it's something that, you know, we still continue and that I'm still passionate about. And I thankfully, I still have time to do. So, yeah.
It's available in the App Store, everybody. So please check it out. But also like if, let's say someone's not, you know, into tech or coding or anything like that. But like, I feel like entrepreneurship and like starting your own thing and what you talked about, American dream. I feel like doing that, having that like mindset or like the guts to do that, I feel like, you know, there's a lot of people out there that probably have ideas that like want to do something. Like what would be some words of advice in like starting your own thing?
It's really important to have a co-founder, I think. You don't have to have one to start your own thing, but it helps because there's going to be times where you're not going to want to continue. There might be times where you're having trouble figuring something out based on like your skill set and your knowledge. and just having someone else who is along for the ride with you and like it's like super actually like really down, because there's some co-founders that just kind of want to like, you know, frou-frou about and not, and they just want the equity, and like when it pops off, then they want to come back in and be like, yo, like I was here when you're shooting the gym. But like to actually have a co-founder that is kind of in a similar position as you, you know, and they are both also as hungry as you are, that's both important for the success of your startup. And then two, if you're looking to raise money, a lot of people would rather invest in startups that have more than one co-founder than a startup that has a single co-founder because of all the reasons I mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to say that like you definitely in your journey, when I was talking to you during the pandemic and I was like, oh, I want to do this thing, you know, AKA implicitly awkward, your story and like kind of the things that you said to me really made me like, be like, Marcus, let's do this thing. You know, and I don't know if many people know that, but I also want to like, you know, give you your flowers too, because the way that you talk about, you know, your own venture and like inspiring people to really just go for it, like, you know, that's a big deal. You really like helped me. So I just want other people to like listen to that advice, because a lot of times I felt like, oh, I can't do this, I can't do that. But hearing you and seeing you do what you do is very inspirational and like has helped us, you know, where we're at.
Definitely has. So thanks, man. We appreciate you.
Hey, I appreciate y'all. I mean, wow, that was really sweet. I appreciate y'all.
No, but yeah, but it's true, because I remember the conversations that we would have. We were like outside in the backyard and I was telling you about these things and you were very like supportive and gave great advice.
You know, for everybody who's listening, he's blushing right now. So
that's crazy. I'm like, anyway, yeah. I'm at a loss for words, because like, of course, I've seen, you know, y'all do your thing from, I guess, from this room since we live together. But I've been seeing y'all
live from this room.
I've been seeing y'all do your thing for some time, for like over a year now, really. Yeah. And I mean, I'm always tell you how proud I am of you, but like, I am very proud of you. I'm proud of you too, Marcus. Like, y'all have been doing this thing, and it's hard to kind of start your own thing from scratch and keep it going and be consistent about it. And y'all have both been crushing it. So proud of y'all.
Yeah. I just feel like spaces like this where, you know, well, y'all are Black, but I'm Latina, and like that community of like safe space and like inspiring one another, you know, and just seeing people succeed, especially marginalized groups, like it's very inspirational. And it like
sure does.
Yeah, Marcus, go ahead.
Oh, I was just agreeing with you. It's like having, creating space and creating community to see people like who look like you or like have similar stories to you, like seeing that space and seeing people succeed in that, it means a lot. So I was just agreeing with what you were saying. It's a beautiful thing, man. So I'm glad that even if you didn't know you had an influence on like how this is going, like you definitely have. So once again, we appreciate you and your counsel, and for all the things that you just randomly helped us out with over the past year. There's a lot of random stuff. We can talk about it later. But can we play a game? It's a fun little game called Let Me Put You On. And so for our listeners back home, if there's a movie, book, album, TV show that's been speaking to you, you got to put us all on, right? So let me put y'all on. I watched this show on Netflix called Inside Job. It's animated and it's based around any and all conspiracy theories, and it's comedy, but it's like, they make it so that all the conspiracies are real and they're run by one company. It's really, really funny. Like, I don't know if y'all are into conspiracies and all that, but like anything that you've seen a joke about, it's probably like in the pilot or like the first three episodes. So check that out. If you want something light to laugh at, but also if you really think about it, it's really messed up. That's my Steve. So Inside Job on Netflix. That shit great.
That sounds 100% up my alley. Yeah, I'm trying to watch that.
Right, yeah, check that out then. Let me know what you think. But yeah, what you got? Put us on.
You're going to have to go first.
Okay. So I have two things, but I'm going to start with like a fun fact, and I hope Obi is down with me sharing this. But we like to watch The Bachelorette. We do. It's very good. The drama is hilarious sometimes, the characters on there. So if you have never watched The Bachelor or Bachelorette, you should check it out this season. We really like Michelle. She's a great woman. We really hope she finds love. She's amazing. So I'm going to put you onto that. And then also we watched The Harder They Fall on Netflix. That was really good. I liked it a lot. The music was amazing. The acting was great. I mean, it was great. So definitely check it out.
Before you go, was Michelle on the last season of The Bachelor?
So she was on Matt James's season. She like got to the final two. She's absolutely like gorgeous, beautiful human. She's a teacher.
Okay.
She's from Minnesota. Sorry. Like, okay. She's a good, I hope I say this and she is, but like, I just get great vibes. And like, we both want her to find love.
I can't even lie. When Alexis first started watching The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, I was like, man, what is this? Like,
yeah.
I would kind of like, you know, peek between my phone and my laptop, whatever's in front of me. Yep. I'm all in on it now. I can't, I can't even lie. It's the way they design it, the way they kind of tell like the stories. You know that they're like playing a game with you, but you can't stop participating in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're rooting for Nate. He's Nigerian. I think he's biracial, but he is Nigerian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Everybody Nigerian I'm rooting for on The Bachelor.
What is it? What's that saying about Niger never finished last?
Niger no, they carry last. Basically, like, we don't, everything's first place. That's the mentality.
You got anything?
The only thing I can think of off the top of my head is I've been listening to the new Injury Reserve album, By the Time I Get to Phoenix. So if you're into like kind of like industrial, like a little bit like wonky like hip-hop, talks about stuff like climate change and like technology and dealing with friends passing and things like that. It's like kind of a really ethereal album, but I like it a lot.
True indeed. Absolutely. Well, that's our show. Once again, thank you. If you made it this far, thank you for listening. Before we wrap, you want to plug your app one more time?
Yeah, sure. The app is called Fit Genie, FITGENIE. You can find it on the App Store, the Play Store, and we have a website too, fitgenieapp.com.
Instagram.
Fit Genie app on Instagram.
Beautiful. And if you don't already, follow us on Instagram at Implicitly Awkward. Follow us on Twitter at Implicitly Awk. That's Implicitly AWK. Twitter, give us more characters, please, for the username. And it's neither here nor there. That's all.
And that was Implicitly Awkward.